All right. So I'm going to call the meeting to order and ask if you will give us instructions.
Yes, so if anyone is interested in providing, we've not received any public comments, but if anyone's interested in providing any, you can go ahead and write in the chat or raise your hand. All the controls are at the top of the screen and I'll respond.
Christina, did you want to get moving on to the?
Yep.
So if you can conduct the roll call, please.
Okay, Commissioner Lieberman.
Here.
Commissioner Albert.
Here.
Commissioner Audi.
Here.
Commissioner Aguirre.
Here. Okay, so I will start with to lead the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty
and justice for all.
Okay, moving on, thank you, to public comment.
Right, so there was no public comments. We received an email regarding 8B, which I'll reference when we get to that item.
And we will move on to item 5A, safety moments.
Yes, today's safety moment is about eye health, but I think it should be about heat health. It being so hot down here. So I'll let everybody read about the eye health and switch it up a little bit and just make sure that you remain hydrated and to the extent possible, stay cool and don't exert yourself unnecessarily in the afternoons, especially. So.
Great. Thank you. Good suggestion. So item 5B, the manager's report.
Yes, so I have two things to report in addition to the written item. One is, once again, it's kind of nice because these commission meetings seem to fall on the Monday after our bioassays are complete. So I get to report out on how the bioassay did, and we had 100% fish survival again, which is great. And want to just give a shout out to our swing and night shift operators who they were the ones that did the pH check twice a day during the off hours to ensure that we met our regulatory compliance. So shout out to them. The other thing I wanted to note is that we got our fourth year payment from PG&E for our SGIP, self-generation incentive program for our cogeneration system. And we just received a check of $218,000 from PG&E. So we have one more payment to go next year, and we'll have received over $1 million from PG&E for our cogeneration system. And that's all I have for the manager's report.
Great. Let's hear no, see no. I don't know if I will know if there's questions with my screen, so.
Yeah, I'll keep my eyes open if there's any questions, either if it's from the commissioners, they can certainly speak out, but otherwise there's a raised hand that I'll keep my eyes on.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to item 5C, financial reports.
That's Matt. Matt, you're muted.
Thank you. Guilty. There is an investment report and a performance report.
in your packets for you to review, but I wanted to point out and discuss a little bit on the item 5C3, which is a memo regarding our CIP funding status and how it's going to be funded. As you'll note, there's about $300 million to go to fund the balance of the CIP over the next several years. Rescue, the program is proceeding as scheduled, so more borrowing is planned even later this calendar year, and there's some details in that. I would point to this as a little bit of silver lining in terms of the pandemic impact to interest rates, especially. We're finding it is extraordinarily affordable to borrow money right now, and we want to take advantage of that. So as outlined in the memo, we will be proceeding with the state revolving fund loan. Teresa and I were on the phone last week, again with a number of state officials and our own council to resolve a last kind of negotiating item on that. We think we made some good progress there. And that's going to be for $169 million at 1.6% or so. The other piece that we're proceeding with is the WIFIA loan. We want to go after more EPA money. That money has become even cheaper because it's indexed according to the Treasury rates, and Treasury rates right now are extremely low. There is an opportunity to refinance and refund a couple of bond series from 2014, 2015. So we're gearing up on that. That will be some activity that will come to this commission in September. It may also have some items that will come to your respective councils and boards in September or shortly, as soon as we can get on your docket calendars. And the last item is there's a possibility that we can reset the interest rate that was executed on the WIFIA loan. That was a 2.4% interest rate. In this next WIFIA loan, the reset of this existing loan could be somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.3%. So we're pushing hard to take advantage of this market, take advantage of the low interest rates, and to save all of the members a great deal of money as outlined in the last piece of the memo. So if there aren't any questions, I just wanted to share that and also share that we've spoken with your respective staff about their support that's needed for this.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, appreciate the update. Looks like an exciting time to be doing some of that reconfiguration. So thank you for staying on top of it. I did have a couple of questions about the portfolio report, the investment report, which basically, I guess, boiled down to, on the one hand, I'm pleased that the yields have held up, but I'm also actually a little bit concerned that the yields have held up. And I noticed that there was a mention in the report from the consultant that we beat all of the metrics, I think, for the various funds, which paradoxically, that always makes me nervous because it makes me wonder what we're doing to beat the index. Or are we taking additional risk that we don't necessarily wish to do? So I was wondering if you could comment. I have one other question beyond that, but I was wondering if you could comment on that a little bit.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Olbert. I think PFM is very careful about the quality of the investments that we make. And they're very thoughtful and proactive when it comes to these things. You know, I have kept an eye on some of the companies that they're invested in, the corporate bonds that we're invested in. None of them are, what I would consider risk. They're all doing fairly well or extremely well in this pandemic environment. And so we've held to their recommendation to hold to those. That said, it is something that we continue to keep an eye on. The indexes were chosen specifically because they sort of mirror what our intentions are for these portfolios. We have an operating portfolio that's rather short term, so that index was tailored to that one. And then we have these 5-year CIP type of reserves that are also, it's a different index. So what I could do is go back and look more closely at those indexes or indices and you know, make sure that they're the right ones. It may be that the index itself is just going to be some benchmark that will always exceed or perform against, but I don't have an answer right now other than we do look at these, we do review the portfolio. I'm in close contact with our PFM person, and they understand our policy.
But I appreciate that, and I also appreciate your attention to this, and I know that you're at least as concerned as I am about these things. Well, I appreciate you staying on top of it, and if you have time to look into that index issue you were talking about, that would be great. I mean, that's obviously a low priority thing, I would imagine.
I can do that.
You touched on the second question that I had. And I'm particularly pleased that you're actually looking at the particular corporate issuers that were invested in, because I hadn't noticed it before, but we've increased our focus on corporate issuances in the last year, and that's fine if that's what the signals say we should do, but personally, I often feel like at least on the equity market side, that there are a whole bunch of people out there smoking something that they probably ought not to be smoking, just in terms of the pandemic impact. So if you're actually looking at and keeping a close eye on the specific issuers that we're invested in, I'm pleased to hear that, and I would encourage you to keep doing that.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. We will, and I appreciate your concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Matt, is there any way we can get that kind of a rate for our refinancing?
There's something that the members, I think a lot of your my counterparts are looking at their opportunities there as well. But sure, it's an extraordinarily good time to refinance.
Thank you. All right. Moving on, if I have no other questions, to item D, engineering projects.
Hi, I have no additional verbal report on top of the written.
Okay, thank you. Jessica, any questions on the engineering CIP analysis? Okay, moving on to the commission requested staff level action items, item E.
I do want to highlight that I started looking into our bylaws, and given the commission's request to change the date of when commissioners hold office to January rather than July, to more synchronize with the election process, in looking at it, there's a lot more changes that need to be done with the bylaw, so it's going to take a little bit longer than I had originally anticipated. I thought it would be just an easy one-off change, but apparently the bylaws have not been changed for over 15 years, and so there's some things that need to be updated, including our name, because we're still using South Bayside System Authority. So that's all I have to report on that item. Stay tuned.
Teresa, is this something that a subcommittee of the commission should be working on the bylaws with you or with a staff person? I know in other boards that I sit on, usually it's kind of led or helped, supported by either board members or commissioners.
Right. Let me dive into it a little bit more to see what needs to be updated. I think if it's something easy like changing our name, certainly I can take care of that. But if it starts getting into policy level things, yeah, certainly a commission subcommittee would be useful.
Okay, great.
And through the chair, I do have a comment on this one.
Yes, Warren.
And not that I'm opposed to changing the bylaws, and when we appoint our, when we vote on chair, vice chair, secretary, etc. I will mention, however, that at least in my experience, and George, I don't know if this is different from yours or not, because we've both been on for a few years when this happened. The reappointment of our own officers, if you will, I'm not even sure what I want to do, that coming in July has actually been helpful when we've gone through some changes. So, for example, when the member of Redwood City was not running for re-election, we, you know, I know I became chair at that point in July or August. And by January, when we had the, when we were seating the new representatives, you know, I at least had some experience in that area already, and it made it a little bit easier for the incoming members, I thought, not to have to deal with all of a sudden voting for who should be chair, vice chair. And we kind of, 6 months later, I would say the Redwood City member probably much more comfortable. And it made that transition easy. So again, I think whatever we do is just fine, but I just want to mention that in some ways, I think the current process has actually worked quite well and may have facilitated the appointment and the process.
Okay, thank you for that feedback. Anybody else have any comments?
Yeah, I hear you, Warren. I hadn't thought of it in that light. So that's it's, yeah, I appreciate that.
Through the chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's certainly something to be considered. I don't, you know, there's probably not one perfect or absolutely right answer here. There are, of course, other ways of addressing with those kind or addressing those kind of transitional issues. You know, I know, for example, in my own case, I've talked to Teresa and to staff about my plan is to make sure that the person who replaces me from San Carlos, that I'm available to brief them on, you know, my understanding and background of stuff so that they're not just coming in cold. And I suspect that, you know, that can certainly not happen in particular circumstances, unique circumstances. But I think in general, you know, we're all experienced elected officials. We know about handoffs and stuff. So there are other ways that this can be addressed too. So.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, if not, we'll move on to item F, the rescue program.
Can I backtrack just a second?
Yes, George.
Is this where we bring up items for future consideration, or is that later?
I think that would be, would that be under six?
That would be under six.
Yeah. Okay. Next Thank item, you. George.
Sorry.
That's okay. Okay, back to item F.
Yeah, I have nothing beyond the written report.
Okay, thank you, Jessica. Any questions on it? 5F, Rescue Program Design Build Project Status Update. Okay, thank you. Moving on to matters of commission members' interest. George, you're on.
I would appreciate, Teresa, if you could have the staff look at what happens as we're designing these pump stations is if we have a force main failure either in Menlo Park or Redwood City, you know, the force main that's coming to the tunnel, how the our proposed design will work in that case to ensure we have adequate safety on those systems. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, certainly. I know those are things that we've looked at before, but we can dust off the work and create a memo to distribute to the commission on that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And any other commissioners have anything for the matters of commission members' interest?
I've got one quick one.
Yes.
And you know, this is if the commission and staff think it makes sense. Recently, I had attended a JPA meeting where when there wasn't something specifically being shown, so when there wasn't a presentation being shared or something like that, they had the agenda up on the screen. And as we went through the agenda, they actually updated, and I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what they did, but they updated where we were in the agenda. And I think it certainly made it easier for anybody from the public who was participating in the meeting to kind of track what was going on. And actually, I would even say if you didn't have the agenda printed out or otherwise available to you as a commissioner, it could make that easier as well. So I just wanted to raise that to see if the commission and staff thought, you know, beginning with our next meeting, if it's not an undue amount of work, that we have the agenda kind of posted and where we are tracking in the meeting on that as we go through the meeting.
Warren, that is an excellent suggestion, as I'm trying to balance between the agenda and Teams, and so minimizing screens, it's always helpful if we have the agenda as we move forward. And of course, when we have a PowerPoint, we will. I don't know how challenging that is for staff to.
So is everybody seeing the agenda right now?
Yeah, and if you could enhance it a little bit, make it a little bit bigger, I think that would be helpful. So yeah, and then is it easy enough to move from there to a presentation to a PowerPoint?
Yeah, I'll say yes.
Okay. You know, that would be, that is helpful. I do see that on most meetings that we are on. It's helpful to be able to follow. Again, if you don't have it a printed one, I'm kind of minimizing screens and trying to keep up with it, especially chairing the meeting. But sure. Good point, Warren.
Thank you.
Any other matters of commission members' interest? Okay, then we will move on to number 7A. The minutes. Okay. Let me see.
I'm certainly happy to move the consent calendar if there's no discussion of that.
I think I had a question on one item on the consent calendar, which I'm happy to deal with as however, Alicia, you want to deal with it.
Okay, do you want to, you can pull that. Is there anybody else that wants to pull, tell us which one, I'm sorry. Mark.
It's a very brief question on item 7D as in dog.
7D, okay. Anybody else have something on consent that they'd like to pull? Okay. Go ahead, Mark, and then we'll vote after.
Okay, thank you. The question I have is, darn it, wouldn't you know it? Hang on a second, I need to get back to where I was. The wrong button on my computer.
Yeah.
There we are. Okay. Just a quick question. I have no problem at all with the proposal and whatnot, but the staff report mentions that the State Water Resources Control Board had rejected our request to use backflow preventers, and I was wondering what the backstory was on that.
Let's see. You know, Kim, I think Monty might be a good one to answer this.
Sure.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Teresa. Hi, commissioners. This is one where Title 17 of the California Code of Regulations specifically requires wastewater treatment facilities to have what they call an air gap pipe backflow prevention system to protect the public potable water system. And what that is it creates an actual gap. You have a tank where the potable water is pumped into. And where it goes in, there's an actual physical gap of air to where there's no way any water from the treatment plant can be siphoned back into the public utility system. So what they're doing, it's much easier and less expensive to install regular backflow prevention devices, as you see in many businesses and even in some of our houses and on irrigation systems. But and wastewater treatment plants is very specific in the regulations that we're to have an air gap. So we propose just a temporary system to basically build our new air gap system due to relocation because of construction easements where the new connector pipe's going to go. And the state said, no, we're not going to allow it because it's about an eight month construction period. So they said, we're not going to allow you to do double backflow preventers in that interim time. And they're making us go to some form of an air gap system, even on a temporary system. So we're working on that, and hopefully we'll have an answer from them this week and we can proceed on with our construction project.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thank you for that, Monty. Any other questions on consent agenda? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion to approve the consent.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Olbert?
Yes.
Commissioner Audi?
Yes.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 8A.
Okay, now I have to do the presentation. Let's see. Jessica, can you share the presentation again? Or I can't. You know what? Let me show it. Oh, okay. Jessica. And then you need to give Kim control.
Okay. Let me get to where we were. Here we are. Okay. Good morning. So the topic of this item is muck disposal. And muck disposal was something that was identified as a high risk item early on in the project. And we've talked about this issue, if you recall, several months ago when we were talking about the risk registers for the rescue program. This was on the risk register and identified as a high dollar risk to the project. So wanted to give a little bit of background of how we got to where we are on this issue. During Stage 2B contract negotiations, and Stage 2B, that was the big contract to complete the design and all of the construction on the project. So during that time, BBJV was developing their quotes for their quote that they would deliver to us, and they got three quotes from three separate sites to dispose of the muck that comes out of the tunnel. And it's a lot of dirt that comes out. It's a, you know, 16 foot diameter, 3 miles long. That's a lot of dirt to get rid of. So so they received three quotes, and in the contract, we decided to use the lowest quote that they received as the base contract amount. And on top of that, we put in an allowance item to deal with what we knew was a very volatile dirt market, especially in the Bay Area. It's until you write the contract with the disposal site, the costs can jump around a lot. So we wanted to not overpay in this lump sum contract. So that's why we used the lowest quote for the contract itself. And then on top of that, the contractor also wasn't willing to take on all of the risk of the costs, the potential uplift in the costs of muck disposal. So we included an allowance amount, which was about 44% higher than the lowest quote that had been received. So when we got to the point where BBJV was signing subcontracts to get the work done, they were negotiating with all their subcontractors, including the muck disposal sites. By that time, the location that had given us the lowest quote had closed, and the two others were refusing the material. And that was based on a change in the regulatory environment. The state board put out new limits on the contamination that can be in the soil in order for the soil to be considered the cleanest soil. So since and the samples that we had taken of our soil had met the cleanest soil requirements previously, but with the new levels, we did not meet that requirement. And so these sites, which were only taking materials that was considered the cleanest, all of a sudden our soil didn't qualify for that. So that put BBJV in a bit of a scramble mode to find a place to dispose of the soil. They did find a place, and it's a landfill out in Tracy. And it's expensive because most of the costs associated with disposal are trucking costs, especially when you're having to truck out to Tracy. The amount of money adds up very quickly. So while they were on drive one, sending all of the muck to Tracy, we were continuing to look at lower cost options for disposal of the muck. Okay, let's see. So the owners advise our, the SVCW team, our owners advisors put a lot of effort into this, into looking at other disposal options. They contacted their networks in the construction community. They followed up. We put a lot of effort into it, a lot of man hours, and a lot of good work was put into it, including by BBJV, who also put a lot of resources towards this item that in order to try to reduce the cost that we were paying for muck disposal. So based on all that work there, we are close. BBJV is close to signing a contract with a site up in Brisbane. It's called Brisbane Baylands site. And my understanding is the contract is, they're very close to being able to start sending muck to Brisbane. So that's going to be our primary site for sending the muck. And at the same time, we are following up on to set up backup sites in case things, for some reason, Brisbane isn't accepting our muck for a week or so, you know, we'll have another place less expensive than Tracy to send it. So the topic of today's agenda is actually one of the backup sites. And it's the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project, and it's a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Project, and they need a lot of soil down in the South Bay to bring up the elevations in the former salt ponds and return them to better habitat. In this case, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, being a federal agency, they wanted to have a contract directly with us, the public agency, rather than contracting with the private company BBJV. As I mentioned, usually the muck disposal contract is a subcontract. In this case, it's a it's an agreement directly between us and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So the costs would be higher to send the material here. It would be higher than Baylands, but as I mentioned, this is identified as a backup location. And an additional requirement, since this is soil that's going to be directly touching bay water as part of this habitat restoration, there are requirements that the regional board is putting additional requirements for making sure that the soil isn't contaminated. And so we have a task order associated with that work for our environmental permitting company, WRA. So the other thing I want to mention is despite all of the hard work put into this, we are expecting a change order to the contract for disposal of the muck. We will exceed the allowance item that we included in the contract. And we're looking at a contract change order of about 4.7 to 5.6 million. And in a few months, we're going to have a better idea of where we stand in terms of that contract change order. We anticipate bringing it in November. So the recommendation is to approve a memorandum of agreement with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and approve a task order for environmental quality assurance with WRA.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. And I know I've been calling you Jessica. I'm looking at my notes. Thank you, Kim.
That's okay. No problem.
All right. Any questions or comments from commissioners?
I do have a question for Kim.
Yes, Warren.
So, Kim, thank you. Kind of a nice staff report. I think you've kind of highlighted the items and very, very well, and also touched on a couple of things that I just want to get a little more clarification on in your report. Mm-hmm. Based on your experience, and you've kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, there may be things that come up where for some reason they're not able to take the muck for a week or two, and we do need to have a backup site. Once we sign an agreement, typically, how likely is it that, and what are the contractual obligations involved where all of a sudden a location that we've contracted with to take the muck could unilaterally say, you know, we're no longer in position to take it. You now have to find another place. Are we at a lot of risk with that? Are we at minimal risk? Are we at no risk? Just wanted to see if you could amplify on what is the essentially the risk and likelihood of us needing secondary places and what the contractual obligations are.
Yeah, so there are risks. We are taking those risks into account and doing our best to mitigate it against those risks. But I would say that those risks are fairly minimal in this case. I mean, there is the ability in the contract. We wanted flexibility to send as much muck as possible to this location, but not be forced into a certain amount requirement. And so there's a need and a want for flexibility on both sides. So there is a risk that a site could shut down for a week because, the effort to move the dirt around on the site, there's some effort needed on the site itself. So in order to be ready for the muck to come. So for various reasons, they may not be ready for it. They may, labor disputes, political issues, there is some risk out there. But as I said, we're looking to mitigate the risk and we've got a good relationship with this Bayland site. We expect to be able to send the majority of the muck to them, if not all of it.
And then just as a quick follow-up question, am I correct in assuming that, and again, you've kind of alluded to this, but if regulatory requirements change from where they are today, is my understanding that in those kinds of situations, the agency that has agreed to take this muck can unilaterally say, we're not taking it anymore because we're not allowed to. And it's now fully up on yours, and contractually, they're just basically saying it's your problem, and contractually, it is your problem because we don't have to worry about it.
Yes, that is a risk. I don't think that I think it was 4 years between the contaminant limits that had been set and when they were reset. They're not reset like, every 6 months. It's a long, period of time between the resetting of those limits. So we don't expect that to happen within the next couple of years.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair.
Yes, Alicia.
Thank you, Alicia. Since the original approval of this item that the change order might apply to predates my arrival here, I apologize for my ignorance on it. but I wouldn't mind a little bit more color and background on how a $4 to $5+ million change order fits into the scheme of things. Because, you know, one reading of it is, well, and I know hindsight's always wonderful. It's always 2020. You know, one reading of it is, gee, how come we didn't anticipate something like that? On the other hand, for all I know, this contract may have been worth, that it's part of, may have been worth $400 million, in which case $5 million is kind of a rounding error, even though it's a big number. So can you give me a little bit more color on that and maybe touch on why some things like muck disposal end up being deferred to sort of future negotiation when contracts are settled?
Yes. So I can, so the, I've got, do I have those numbers in front of me? The, in the contract itself, so there was the contract amount and the allowance amount. In the contract was $5.7 million for muck disposal. The allowance was an additional 2.8, I believe, something along those lines, 2.8. So we had, so it was an item that was about an $8 million. Oh, thank you. All right, there it is. 5.7, 2.5, 8.2. I was pretty close. So total in the contract was $8.2 million. So, you know, looking at a $5 million, potentially $5 million change order on top of that, that's a, you know, that's a, more than half, you know, of what we anticipated as being in the range. And the reason that we did include it as an allowance is just, you know, in negotiating the agreement, all the discussions are around how to handle risk, the risk of the dirt market collapsing and, you know, BBJV gets a much favorable quote, once it's time to sign the contract, the things have improved significantly. That, you know, the difference between the amount in the contract and the amount that BBJV pays, that would have been pure profit for them. Of course, it didn't go that way. It went the other way. But that was, we wanted to protect the agency against that. And at the same time, you know, BBJV knew that it's a volatile market and sites are opening and closing and conditions change in the number of contracts around the Bay Area that are, you know, looking to dispose of material, and the number of sites that are willing to take it is really it's difficult to pin down at any given time. And so that's why we chose to use an allowance for this, to be able to not overpay, but also not receive, not put in a number that was so big into the contract that, you know, BBJV would be potentially making a lot of profit on this item. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Thank you. It does in part. I want to think about it a little bit more, and I may get back to you just with some follow-up questions. One minor thing, just to make sure I understand the terminology correctly, it sounds like the way you're using the term allowance is it is sort of a line item in the contract, but it's not one that the contractor is held to necessarily. Is that sort of correct?
Right. So it was included in the total. It's a line item that's total included in the total contract amount. But if they don't use it, we don't pay it. So in the end, right, you know, if they hadn't used the entire allowance, we would get a deductive change order on the contract to reflect that amount that they didn't pay for.
Okay.
Or that they didn't spend. Yeah.
One sort of follow-up request is, and I'm thinking not only with myself, as I said, this particular thing predates my participation on the oversight board. But San Carlos is obviously going to have somebody new or somebody else in that position in a few months because I won't be here. I think it would be helpful, if it's not too much work, to put together either like a list of all of the major allowances, or at least somehow kind of characterize all of the major open risk factors like this. And if it's included already in the detailed reports that you guys provide us every month, what it boils down to is I just need some education on how to find it. But one way or another, I think that information would be useful for somebody new coming on board.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Thank you.
Just a reminder is what's the total for BBJV's contract?
It's $220 million.
So that's a frame of reference. This is right. A $5 million change out of a $220 million contract.
Which, that's fair. I thank you for following up on that, George. And again, I want to make clear, I'm not like angry or upset or anything about this. This stuff happens, and you make you take your best shot. I'm just trying to understand it, and sort of at the end there, I wouldn't mind myself and my successor being a little bit more educated on what the potential risk factors are.
Sure. Got it.
Anyone else? You know, as I sit on the other board that I sit on, SBWMA, where the issue of hauling recyclables or waste to Tracy and other places has been astronomical. So I totally understand us looking at this. I like the idea of working with the agency that will be able to use it. Hopefully, it'll be a better win-win for as we look at waste places. They're really minimizing throughout the state, and it's just hard with it. When we take less and less recyclables, less and less ways of being able to compost and stuff. So it's always something that's top of mind, for me.
And Alicia, through the chair, if I may?
Yes, Warren.
Just kind of related a little bit to Mark's comment, I would say that over the 12 to 15 years that I've been on the commission, I would say that the issue of hauling in one form or another, not just muck, although muck is, I like you saying that, so it's kind of fun. the issue of hauling waste products or stuff away has been a topic that has been, I would say, regularly come up in commission meetings. And so it's just on a variety of things. So I just want to kind of say that my experience, staff are well concerned and well understanding of the volatility and also the importance of trying to arrange for these kinds of situations, these contracts, as effectively as possible. Because over the whole scheme of what we do, it can amount to a fair amount of money. Again, it can be a pretty significant expense. So just want to mention that this has been a topic that I know has come up in a variety of forms over the years.
Warren, and I want to point out one of our largest costs for wastewater treatment is disposing of our biosolids, which involves hauling to various locations in California. And it is extremely volatile and extremely expensive to haul.
Through the chair?
Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you, Alicia. Warren, I think that's a fair point. On the other hand, I'm just making an observation here, that actually experience cuts both ways, because to the extent that one knows and has been dealing with for years this issue, then, hypothetically, you could imagine, okay, it identifies, therefore, something that you need to go back through the entire plan and scrub through going, okay, where else might this risk touch us, and then revise the numbers in terms of updating what you think the cost of the project will be. I'm not proposing that there was anything, that wasn't either done or should have been done or whatnot, but those kind of things cut both ways. I mean, dealing with a long-term problem means that you're also highly aware of what the problem is and therefore, can adjust the forecast to show the nature of the problem.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments on item 8A? Okay, then believe you, we need to take action on these items.
Yes, we do.
Move approval.
Okay, I have a motion. Can I get a second? Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Albert?
Yes.
Commissioner Audie?
Yes.
Commissioner Glory?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, item 8.
So I'm going to move back to the presentation. So Jessica, can you show the presentation again? AB relates to our public outreach program. And before I move into, before I move into the discussion about it, I did want to note that the commission received an email. I'm not going to read it, but just want to note that it will be referenced as part of the minutes. And the email gave some thoughts or asked the commission keep in mind some thoughts on this topic. And it will be made part of the minutes. So wanting to point out that since 2019, there's been a lot of changes that have happened in our public outreach program. Pre-2019, it was relatively minimal. And post-2019, I think it was May, that's when we contracted with the City of Redwood City's public information officers. And rather than only do public outreach in relation to our capital programs and our capital projects, we did it more from a holistic agency standpoint, starting with branding, getting everything consistent with each other, because before this, it was there was no real consistency amongst our messaging out to the community. So we've gone through a lot of changes, and I think right now we're doing pretty well. There are some opportunities that we can improve upon, one of which is probably the biggest one of which is our social media use. And we have a lot of materials that we currently have available that we can leverage, that we're going to. We do a lot of outreach to schools, as I had mentioned several meetings ago. And with that material are some videos, educational materials that we'll be putting on our new website. And then in turn, using through our Facebook and our Twitter feeds. Additionally, one thing I'm trying to do more of is we have a lot of good stories to tell. So getting press releases out more often about our good stories. For example, the SGIP payment that we just got for our cogeneration system, things like that, that we're gonna put more focus on to get out. I think once we get our website in place in September, it's gonna greatly facilitate our ability to improve our public outreach. So with that, I will just open it up for discussion, and wanting to point out that there have been vast improvements over the past 2 years, and really needing to hear what the goals of the commission are for public outreach before we can come up with any changes to the plan. So I'll open it up for discussion. There's no action that's needed on this, just discussion. And if there's direction the commission wants to give me, I'll come back with a plan.
Thank you, Teresa. Mm-hmm. Commissioners?
I'd like to make one comment. In the world of public outreach, we had a problem with the COVID-19. We had a lot of wipes showing up in our toilet in the system and causing a lot of blockages. And we chose to use a Facebook advertisement and made a little video that we broadcast. And it got an incredible amount of response and was extremely cost effective. It didn't cost us a lot of money, and we got literally 100,000s of hits on it. It's to the level that it's, you know, some of our board members are saying, why should we ever publish a newsletter again? This was so much more effective.
Yeah.
Well, that tells you the sign of the times, George. I have members in my community, especially folks that aren't as savvy in social media, that really like the newsletter. So how do you balance both to really communicate with everyone? It's always a challenge. So I'm excited to hear those numbers and know that that was very important. I have three grandchildren, so we have a lot of wipes in my house all the time. And I can tell you, it's like, where do the wipes go? Because they always ask me, because they know I'm such a guru about where to recycle and stuff. And it's like, no, you can't put them there. So thank you for mentioning that. So.
The nice thing about social media, and I was talking with our PIO last week, is that once we put something together, for example, for a newsletter, it's very easy to migrate that into the other platforms.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Great.
I think it's wonderful that that this item has come up and staff is paying such attention to it. I second the comments that have been made just previously about the changing way that you can cost effectively do outreach. In terms of a goal that I sort of have for public outreach, I guess I'd put it this way: we're never going to convince everybody that the SOAR fees that they pay are reasonable, just because nobody ever thinks that anything they pay is reasonable. They always like stuff to be done for free. But to the extent that we can get people to understand the importance of a service that literally nobody thinks about, and therefore, you know, when they see their SOAR fees on their bills, they'll grumble, but they'll have a better level of comprehension. That would be my sort of overarching goal.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
So maybe more explanation of where are your fees going, or what are they being used for, and why are they needed?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, San Carlos, like what all of our communities did a few years ago when we had to drastically increase our SOAR rates, people didn't like it. But one of the things that, for example, helped them understand it was we were able to show them basically the rates had been unchanged for so long. And we were sort of like, you know, do you think inflation hasn't been a factor in all this time? So, mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily saying that's the best way to make the case, but yes, sort of selling the value proposition, right. I think is important.
Yeah. Through the chair, I guess I'm always a big proponent in trying to diversify, because people want to receive information in a lot of different ways. And with Silicon Valley Clean Water, I would say, you know, people don't even know what they want until they get it. So, you know, this is one of those kinds of things where I think social media has become so prevalent among a certain segment of our population, but not everybody, that it's a very good way to get messages out there. And to George's point, you know, you can do that very cost effectively. Newsletters typically are a lot more expensive, but there's going to be a portion of the group that, you know, your community, that's the only way they're going to want to get it. I think what I kind of suggest happening is, you know, you periodically try to confirm whether these sources of information are still being used. And, you know, whether it's a survey on the newsletter to kind of say, hey, confirm that you still want to receive this or not, seeing the downloads of it from the website, you know, trying to make sure that the way we are providing information is still useful for a large enough segment of the community that it makes sense to do. Because ultimately, you do want to make sure that if somebody is interested in getting the information, they have a way to get it. And ideally, they are able to get it in a way that works easily and well for them. You know, I know that we've had issues or questions about, do we videotape our meetings? Well, in my own way of thinking, I would say, if you start making the audio tapes available and nobody is requesting them, it makes it a lot harder to say, okay, if it's an additional significant expense, is it really worth videotaping it? Because we haven't had any indication that there's interest. And in fact, we've done things in that direction. To George's point, however, clearly a Facebook ad became extraordinarily valuable and widespread news. And I would anticipate that Nextdoor, you know, there's a whole bunch of social media aspects that I know each of the cities use. And I would try to learn from their examples, and potentially, if you can tie into any of those lists as well, you don't have to recreate the wheel, because you might be able to get a message out to each of the member entities that they then spread on SVCW's behalf. And these are already folks who we know are interested. So it may get to more people that way than requiring them to use the distribution list that we're able to put together.
Yeah, that's a good point, Warren. Thank you.
Yes, and when the discussion was about sending out information that Mark mentioned, I think the when we do send it out, make sure that we do it in simplified bullet form. People will read and understand it much better than, you know, lots of paragraphs and explanations where they get lost, especially if it's technical.
Yeah, good point. I know I do that. If there's a bunch of words, I'm not going to read it.
If there's more than one screenshot long email, it's gone.
Yeah. And again, through the chair, I find that if you're sending things out at bullet point with, I'll call it a reference to more detailed information can be found here, there'll be a segment of the population that actually do go there. It'll be small. So it's just making it available and letting them know how they can get to it, not expecting a lot of people to do it, but it'll be useful for those who do want it. And again, that's where you just have to weigh what are the costs of getting that up? Because I would say, arguably, if the costs of making it available are not that significant, you're almost always just better off being able to provide it.
Correct. Great. Thank you. Any other comments from my commissioners? Okay. Then I think we're ready to. This was just a discussion. We no voting on this one.
That's right. Okay.
So now we are moving into closed session.
Right. And I will see you all next month.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Actually, excuse me, Madam Chair, if I could make a couple of statements before we convene in closed session, so I can get them on the record. The first one is a requirement of the Brown Act. It relates to item 9C, and the facts and circumstances supporting item 9C is required to be made known, and those arise from Silicon Valley Clean Water's construction of the Rescue Program Pump Station Improvement Project on a portion of property located on Skyway Road and owned by the City of San Carlos. And secondly, with respect to Commissioner Olbert's farewell, for the record, he is recusing himself from all closed session items. due to a potential conflict under the doctrine of incompatible offices, because the items, again, relate to property, real property that is owned by Commissioner Olbert's member agency, the City of San Carlos. And that concludes my open session statements. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Great. So for those who are on the general session, you can remain or leave the meeting. Others that are participating in the closed session can leave this meeting and then open the link that was sent to you by Jessica. So I will see you in closed session. There's Warren, there's George. Okay, we're all back.
Just in passing, mm-hmm. So concluding, at least from my part, is you're going to have to put up with me for another 4 years.
Awesome.
I'm running unopposed.
Oh, very good. Wow.
Yay.
Yep.
Nice. Well done.
Okay, thank you, everyone, for being patient. And we are now moving into open session and ask General Counsel to announce any action taken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As to items 9A through C, no reportable action was taken and direction was given to staff and council.
Great. So that means item, thank you, Christine. Item 11, I think we are ready to adjourn. Is that correct?
That's right.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Have a
thank safe you very time. Much.
Thank you very much. Stay well.
Thank you.
Stay well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.